adequately to the needs of Katrina victims. Only 32% approve of the way President Bush is responding to those needs. So he is doing horrible. And also in a Real Clear Politics poll on the website there, realclearpolitics.com, he said that they say on there that Bush's job approval rating is 40% approve of Bush, how he's handling the presidency, and only 54% disapprove of Bush's handling of everything. So what a mess. What a mess. What does he do? He takes off for India. Yeah. Go fishing, I guess. I don't know. And this is from Sunday. Conservative columnist George Will. And this morning, and this week with George Stephanopoulos, he said, what does civil war look like? He asked George Will. George Will says, this is a civil war. Of course, he's a conservative pundit, George Will. Later, Will even questioned whether Iraq can truly be said to have a government. George Will said, quote, now does Iraq have a government? Let me just postulate the question. A government exists when it has a reasonable monopoly on the legitimate use of violence. Does that mean armies, I guess? As long as the militias are out there, the existence of Iraqi government is questionable. He says, think of Los Angeles. If Los Angeles said the Bloods and the Crips are going to be tolerated, then they're going to be armed, and police their areas and enforce the law in certain areas. What sense would Los Angeles have of a government? None. Government report on ineffective Iraqi reconstruction to blame White House's poor planning. This is from Time Magazine on Monday. The reconstruction of Iraq has cost American taxpayers nearly $30 billion so far, and is still plagued with problems, evidenced by daily power outages, degraded water supplies, and skyrocketing local fuel prices. That sounds like here in the United States. Government officials have laid much of the blame on the insurgency, saying it has drained military resources and made it too dangerous to proceed smoothly. Yet a government U.S. government report, obtained by Time, says that's only part of the story. The story, the report to be issued this week in Time magazine, catalogs a litany of blunders that had more to do with poor planning in Washington than with the insurgency or sectarian violence. Relying on private contractors with questionable loyalties was one problem. So was the haphazard hiring practices that substantially hindered coalition efforts to get reconstruction going. The report criticizes Bush for failing to attract government employees from outside the state and defense departments to work in Iraq. So that the result was that, with scores of unqualified people parachuting in simply to build their resumes and rack up overtime. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. I'm saying he is asleep at the switch here, you know? And that's also from, this is from Sunday, a little veer off from this humdrum of Bush here. Police say that the microwave body part was a hoax. A man and woman face charges. This is from McKeesport, Pennsylvania. A bizarre incident in McKeesport Thursday night involving a microwave and what was believed to be a male body part is being called a hoax. Police in McKeesport said a woman who needed to pass a work-related drug test was the reason behind a fake penis being microwaved at a convenience store. A clerk at the Giant Eagle Get-Go store along Lyle Boulevard told police that a man brought what appeared to be a severed penis into the store and asked her to First of all, where do you get these? I guess I shouldn't ask that question in Las Vegas. They asked her to microwave it Thursday night, but police said the item was actually a fake hollow penis that a woman planned to use to pass a drug test. The Keysport police chief said that the woman's male companion had filled the device with his urine, which the woman somehow planned to pass off as hers for a drug test. The couple stopped at the convenience store to have the device microwaved because the woman wanted the device to be warmed up to something approaching body temperature as part of the drug testing ruse. The police say they plan to charge the woman criminally, although the exact charges have not been determined. How about can they arrest people for being stupid? Maybe. Stupid is as stupid does, right? And this is also from Friday. Four charged, and this is what we had about two months ago. We mentioned this story. But four charged in human tissue theft ring. This is from CNN. New York authorities on Thursday charged four men with illegally harvesting and selling tissue from 1,077 dead people in the past 4 years, possibly including the remains of British broadcasting legend Alistair Cook. The men, including the chief executive of a company that sold human tissue for medical implants, were indicted on charges including conspiracy, unlawful dissection, and forgery. Many of the deceased would have been ineligible as donors due to illness or age, including Alistair Cook, who died in 2004. During a 15-month investigation, which included the exhumation of six bodies, authorities discovered that after removing the bones, the men had replaced them with plastic pipes to maintain an intact appearance. In some cases, they also left gloves, aprons, and other things in the bodies. Hines said the group obtained bodies through a Brooklyn funeral home. Daniel George and Sons' death certificates and consent forms were forged to make it appear that the deceased wanted to donate their bodies and that they were eligible to do so. Unbelievable. Invariably, the detectives found that the deceased were made younger and healthier on paper. That's where the forgery comes in. For Alistair Cook, who died at 95 years old from cancer, the men altered the documents to show he died at 85 of only of a heart attack. Oh, terrible. Terrible. And then I have his next one from Saturday. UAE terminal, the takeover extends to 21 ports. UAE government-owned company is poised to take over the port terminal operations in 21 American ports, far more than the six widely reported. Where the hell is these other 15 coming from? This is from United Press International. The Bush administration has approved the takeover. British-owned P&O, which is, we all should be PO'd about this, Oriental Steam Navigation Company.
Next question.
There you go. President Bush, will you resign from office?
Next question.
There you go. DP World, a deal to set to go through March 2nd unless Congress intervenes, which I think the company has agreed to the 45-day review process. P&O is a parent company of P&O Ports North America, which leases terminals for the import and export and loading and unloading and security of cargo in 21 ports, 11 on the East Coast, ranging from Portland, Miami, blah, 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 and 10 on the Gulf Coast, from Gulfport, Mississippi, to Corpus Christi. So it's 21 ports, not the six BS that have been feeding us for the last week and a half, 2 weeks. The Gallup poll from last Wednesday said that 55% now call the war in Iraq a mistake. More Americans than nearly ever before now say that the war in Iraq is a mistake for the United States, according to a new Gallup poll. The figure now stands at 55%, up 4% since late January. Only once before was the figure higher at 59%, and that was during the period of overall pessimism right after the Hurricane Katrina hit. So, horrible. Also, they noted that the it asked this question about other wars involving the United States, and only the Vietnam War engendered more public opposition than the current Iraq War. The peak opposition to the Vietnam conflict was 61%. That figure for the generally unpopular Korean War was 51%. So bad press. This is 1 week after another. I don't know how much more that the Bush administration can take. You know, they've been hit. How many more hits are they going to take in this mess? This next one is also about the Iraq business. This is from William F. Buckley. They talked with a drawl, whatever it is. National Review Online from Friday. The American objective in Iraq has failed, says William F. Buckley from National Review. He says, I can tell you the main reason behind all of our woes is it is America. The New York Times reporter is quoting the complaint of a clothing merchant in a Sunni stronghold in Iraq. Everything that is going on between Sunni and the Shiites, the troublemaker in the middle, is America. One can't doubt that the American objective in Iraq has failed. The same edition of the paper quotes a fellow, yada, yada, yada. So even Buckley, you got two staunch Republicans, Will, and now you got William F. Buckley, both saying that the Iraq war is a complete and all other disaster over there. There's also a Sudan man forced to marry a goat. A Sudanese man has been forced to take a goat as his wife after he was caught having sex with the animal. Friday, the goat's owner, Mr. Alifi, said he surprised the man with his goat and took him to a council of elders. They ordered the man, Mr. Tombi, to pay a dowry of 15,000 Sudanese dinars.
Holy cow! You sick son of a bitch! You just made your twisted bastard!
I don't know.
Maybe
the goat looks, I don't know what the women look like over. Maybe the goat is the more attractive than the women over there. I don't know. The 15,000 Sudanese dinars is equal to $50 here in the United States for Mr. Alifi. We have given him the goat, and as far as we know, they're still together. Mr. Alifi, told a Juba Post newspaper that he heard a loud noise around midnight on February 13th and immediately rushed out to find Mr. Tombi with his goat. When I asked him, what are you doing here, he fell off the back of the goat. Anyway, what do you call that? I can't call that doggy style, I guess. What do you call that, goat style? I heard Bob about black sheep, but this is ridiculous. So I captured him and tied him up. What about the goat? And Mr. Leafy then called the elders to decide how to deal with the case. They said not to take him to police, but rather let him pay a dowry for my goat because I used it as his wife. So, we need a little laugh at all this bad news. And we go right back into the Iraq business. Pentagon, Iraqi troops downgraded. No Iraqi battalion capable of fighting without U.S. support. This is from CNN. The only Iraqi battalion capable of fighting without U.S. support has been downgraded to a level requiring them to fight with American troops backing them up, the Pentagon said on Friday. The battalion made up of 700 to 800 Iraqi army soldiers has repeatedly been offered by the United States as an example of the growing independence of the Iraqi military. The competence of the Iraqi military has been cited as a key factor in when the United States will be able to bring their troops home. We see more of these Iraqi troop forces in the lead. Oh, this is from President Bush. Oh, okay. We got to make sure we get this one right. As we see more of these Iraqi forces in the lead, we will be able to continue with our stated strategy. Oh, what is that? That changes by the day. That says, as Iraqi forces stand up, we will stand down. So that's going to happen, I think, when hell freezes over, right? The battalion, according to the Pentagon, was downgraded from level 1 to a level 2 after a recent quarterly assessment of its capability. So all those troops, Iraqi troops, are incompetent, and they run. It's a disaster over there. This is also from Friday. Green tea may protect the aging brain. People who regularly drink green tea may have a lesser risk of mental decline as they grow older. Researchers have found that their study of more than 1,000 Japanese adults in their 70s and beyond found that the more green tea men and women drank, the lower their odds of having cognitive impairment. So the findings build on evidence from lab experiments showing that certain compounds in green tea may protect brain cells from the damaging processes that mark conditions like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. So I start drinking that green tea now. Everybody's got to start hoarding all that green tea. So, and what else we have? This is from the Guardian over Observer over in the UK. Rendition Revisited. Of course, rendition is not torture. Oh, no, it's different. Has the CIA used British airports to render terror suspects from Afghanistan and Middle East to countries that practice torture? The short answer is that we don't know. The 200 CIA flights that we now know could well have been simply moving agents around. The war on terror is keeping them busy, after all. Should we be suspicious? Yes. But not only is there clear evidence that the U.S. administration has taken a different view of human rights since 9/11, but there is mounting evidence that the CIA has rendered prisoners. Like rendering that goat, I guess, from that guy in that story. 19 CIA agents are wanted in Milan for the kidnapping of Osama Mustafa Hassan Nasir. There you go. I've been practicing that all day. An Islamist cleric dragged into a van near his home in February 2003. He has flown to Egypt for interrogation and later told relatives he had been tortured with electric shocks. There is other evidence of other flights from Sweden, Denmark, and Austria. Wow. And then we had Friday, Army charges 7 and sex for money website. What is going on with first we had that story, what was it, about a year and a half ago I read about that one soldier who was having sex with that teenage Iraqi up in the guard post and he blew him away. The Army has charged 7 paratroopers from the celebrated 82nd Airborne Division with engaging in sex acts in videos shown on a website, authorities said on Friday. 3 of the soldiers faced court martials.
Holy cow!
On charges of sodomy, pandering, and engaging in sex acts for money, according to a statement released by the military. 4 other soldiers.
Alcohol is bad.
I don't know. I hope they were drinking. 4 other soldiers received what the military calls non-judicial punishment. The Army has recommended all of them be discharged. The military-themed website did not make any direct reference to the division or Fort Bragg, a sprawling post about 70 miles north of Raleigh, where this emanated from. And that's the last one we bring our guest down would be the gates of hell are open. The threat of a large-scale civil war in Iraq is imminent, reports the Weekend Australian from Australia. In a land of daily bloodshed and bombings, it took another explosion this week to hammer home what many in Iraq and among its Arab neighbors have already accepted. A civil war is already being fought in the nation the U.S. liberated. Like I said, they're all jumping on it. It's a civil war. The only one that doesn't acknowledge that is Bush. You know, everybody, it's civil war, it's a civil war. You know, I've been saying that for 6 months. You know, now he's off in India now buying socks or something. Who knows? So I think now we'll bring on our guest. There we go. Uh-oh, what happened? He's not there? Oh. Mike, oh. Well, we'll mosey on. We've got some more news. And so the gates of hell are open. The threat of a large-scale civil war in Iraq is imminent. I already mentioned that. The land of daily bloodshed and is bombing. It took an air explosion this week to hammer home what many in Iraq and among its Arab neighbors have already accepted. A civil war is already being fought in the nation the U.S. liberated. It was an audacious attack, even by the brutal standards of the new Iraq. When the giant dome of the Golden Mosque in Samarra, the holiest shrine in the country, fell just before 7 a.m. on Wednesday, the inter-Islamic battles of the last 12 months reached a new nadir. The toppling of a sacred site urged into the open the Shia fighters who had previously battled the Sunni uprising in the back lanes of towns and villages. The Shias now have a lightning rod to make the rebellion public. The gates of hell, slightly ajar for a year, have been flung open. So all hell's breaking loose over there in Iraq again. I mean, it's a keep on. So I think he's back, right? There he is. There you go. Bring on Michael J.W. Stickings of The Reaction. Sir, are you there?
Yeah, good evening. How are you?
Hi, thank you for being on the program. I couldn't find any music for you, so we used Justin from the Dunkelfins music for you. There it is. There you go, because you're like a moderate, so he's the Dunkelfin and the elephant, donkey and the elephant put together. So we thought maybe a general purpose type of theme music.
I suppose I'm a moderate, but I'm not a moderate the way Justin Gardner is.
Ah.
And certainly the moderates at the Moderate Voice don't think I'm a moderate.
Really?
So, yeah.
Now give everybody a little background about yourself, because this is your first appearance on this program, and you're a new voice for all the many people who listen to this program.
Well, it's an honor to be here. Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. I am a blogger in Toronto, which gives me a bit of perspective on American politics, I suppose. Blogging is just it's become a second job, but I mean, it's a hobby. I'm a policy analyst with the government of Ontario.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'm also doing my PhD in political science at the University of Toronto in political theory. And I started blogging about 9 months ago as sort of a chance to have a bit of an outlet, a chance to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
I knew very little about blogging at the time, and have just sort of tried to build up the reaction into something people might want to read about. I'm, generally speaking, a sort of center-left winger, I suppose, sort of a New Republic Democrat. But, labels get thrown around all the time, so.
True. That's how I am. I always say I'm a common sense Democrat, where I'm not afraid to, blast them when they make a mistake, but generally I side on the side of the Democrats, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know what it is, as I've sort of gotten used to the blogosphere a bit more, and as I've had a chance to keep a diary at COS and TPM Cafe and these sort of things, like when I'm at the Moderate Voice and I write something that's critical of Bush, I'm immediately branded some kind of out-of-control left-winger. Mm. And people like Goldstein at Protein Wisdom have criticized me. That's what you get. I mean, they criticize Gandelman, too.
Mm.
I wrote a diary entry at COS several months ago, and I was accused of being a paid Clintonite infiltrator.
Really?
Yeah, so, which I'm not. I wish I were, but I'm not. It all just depends, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a...
What's
the, It's interesting blogging from Canada, because I'm sort of I have a different perspective on the whole red state blue state thing.
Mm.
But it's amazing what you get called out there. So
yeah, well, I mean, last week I had Aaron Douglas on, and he's on Battlestar Galactica, and he's also a Canadian, and he gave us some views from outside looking into the United States.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to hear now. And I'm on your blog right now, and you have a post about the troops. The new Zoghbi poll want overwhelming
right.
Majority, 72% of American troops serving in Iraq think the U.S. should exit the country within a year.
Yeah, I guess they're all traitors.
Yeah. No. We disagree with the administration. You're anti-patriotic. You're a commie, pinko, anti-patriotic, leftist snob. That's what we are.
That's right. That's
yes.
Right.
Although, you know, people are dying, and it's, you know, I say, I'm in this program, I've been calling the Civil War there over there for 6 months. You know, if it's not a Civil War, you tell me what a Civil War is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's this term, it's some kind of civil strife, or it's sectarian violence. This is all euphemism for what's really going on over there.
Yeah, sectarian. It's the same thing. Oh no, we're not torturing the prisoners. We're rendering them. Well, what the hell's that then? It's ridiculous.
Well, that's interesting you mention that, because one of the posts I've written recently, one of the stories that is getting quite a bit of attention up here, is the Maher Arar case.
Oh yes.
The Syrian-born Canadian who was detained by U.S. officials, basically imprisoned indefinitely, and then shipped off to Syria. Rendered to Syria.
Oh yes.
Where he was tortured brutally, mercilessly for 9 months, and is now suing the federal government, U.S. federal government.
I thought he just settled. Did he settle, or is that another case?
Actually, yeah, that was another case. That was an Egyptian. Arar's case was thrown out by a federal judge in Brooklyn.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
This guy was just basically taken from his family.
For no reason.
Brutally tortured, and somehow this is acceptable.
Unbelievable.
Anyway. It's getting more attention up here than it is down there, I assume.
Yeah, and then actually you mentioned about the New Republic magazine. As much as I like these magazines, they're so outdated when they come out. I mean, everything in there is old. Same thing in newspapers. I see, pretty much everything's going to go away, to the internet, because even the New Republic, as much as I like reading it, it comes out every other week, and it's, all this stuff is old news,
Which is, they started a blog recently,
mm-hmm.
so they're actually trying to, I think, keep up with the day-to-day news cycle, a 24-hour news cycle, but obviously they can't.
No. Now, what about,
yeah.
You want to talk about Bush's approval rating, or lack thereof. He's
disapproval rating.
Disapproval rating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, he's getting close to Nixon range there with his approval rating, right? And then Cheney is even lower than Bush. So Cheney's like 18% approval rating, right?
I haven't seen the numbers for Cheney, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's about 18. Although I believe one of those 18 has to be Whittington, because he did apologize to Cheney for being shot.
Yeah,
so.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, what is he apologizing to him for? I mean,
I'm sorry I got in the way. It was very, very strange. It is odd. I mean, just when you think the Bush can't set another low, just when you think, there's got to be some kind of line that he can't possibly pass below, suddenly 34%.
Yeah.
And this is a wartime president, you would like us to believe, who was only reelected a year ago.
Yeah, he's a wartime president. He keeps trumping that up. I'm a wartime president. Okay, really? Where's that war declaration at then?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was too busy.
it's maddening. Everybody knows. I can't stand this war. A friend of mine was killed in action over there. I mean, it's more and more meaningless by the day. There's no way. Those troops are in the middle. I say, we're there now. I say we can't just herky jerky pull the troops out. We got to stay there and at least do some kind of semblance of either patrol those borders to make sure no more terrorists come in, and also to put some kind of guard on those oil fields, and then let the Iraqis take care of the internal mess.
Yeah, I'm really not sure there's any other option at this point.
No.
And the fact is, there are so many who are just jumping off the bandwagon. I'm sure you heard that Bill Buckley has basically called Iraq a lost cause.
Yes, I read his quote. Can you talk like William F. Buckley? How are you talking?
I'll lean back like Buckley. essentially the godfather of modern American conservatism.
There you go. What about George Will, too? He also came out at it, because on Sunday I read the quote that I call him Snuffleupagus, but Stephanopoulos, he said that, what's a civil war? And then Will shot back, goes, this is a civil war. So even they're all bailing out on him.
Bill Kristol, Francis Fukuyama. I mean, they're all sort of running for cover at this point.
Yeah, all the intelligent conservatives or the intelligent Republicans are bailing. The brainwashed ones like Hannity and Rush and some of the others are still sticking to Bush.
So I take it that means you don't think John McCain is intelligent.
He's trying to stay on Bush's good sides because he's running for president. That's what that boils all down to. He had that story about Cheney retiring. I think that plays into it. I think he is going to retire more or less towards the end of, I said maybe the end of 2007 or something like that, and clear the way for McCain to get on the ticket, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this was an Insight magazine, which is the Washington Times' online magazine, so it's hard to know what to believe. You know, there's sort of rumors that he would retire sometime after the midterms, probably early next year. I've read quotes from senior Republican officials who say, no way, that's not going to happen. And I don't know. It's hard to believe this guy leaving at this point. It's almost like he would stay in just out of spite. But, you know, I guess you never know. And even then, it's not quite clear that McCain would be the choice. Condi Rice is another one. You know, or, I don't know, Bush could put some flack in there for all I know.
George Allen. He used to be the governor of Virginia.
Bill Frist, he's not running for re-election. That's a possibility. Mitt Romney, Massachusetts. You know, any of these characters. But I don't know. Would Bush want to appoint an heir apparent at this point? I don't know.
Yeah, but
it's sort of hard to know.
Yeah, but usually they like having a successor to like legitimize his administration, like when Reagan with Bush.
Yeah.
You know, Bush got in, it kind of legitimized Reagan's, you know, that the American people didn't revolt against Bush and put in Dukakis. And then same thing with Clinton. If Gore would have played his cards better, he would have had Clinton more involved, and we'd be looking at President Gore, the second term of President Gore's administration. You know what I'm saying?
And plus
he doesn't want any Bush doesn't want the Democrats getting either house because they'll start the investigations like left and right, huh?
Oh no, exactly. I think there's a good possibility that Democrats could cut the majority, the Republican majority in the Senate down. It's like 55-45 right now.
Mm-hmm.
It could possibly go 52-48 or something completely unmanageable for Republicans. It's unlikely, though, with all the gerrymandering that's been going on, and we know sort of the kind of things DeLay was up to in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of unlikely that the Democrats could take control of the House again. They could make it close, though, clearly.
Yeah.
And Republicans seem disorganized right now in a way that I haven't seen in a long time. And I think, you know, the Portgate scandal just obviously feeds into that.
Yeah, what do you think about that now? Everything that this Portgate, I'm still kind of... I kind of see what Bush is talking about, that we, you know, if we say no to them, it makes it look like we're siding, you know, against the Arabs. I mean, he does have a point with that. I think if he would have came on and explained this a little bit more before all this hit the fan, I think the American people would be a little bit more behind this or not as concerned. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we're recently, with the Cheney shooting and now with Portgate, what we're getting are fairly small stories that are being blown up because they sort of symbolize or they capture the essence of this administration.
Mm-hmm.
The ignorance, the arrogance, the cronyism. I think in this case it was clearly just arrogance. Bush, you know, even now, not even understanding how anyone could possibly disagree with him on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, though, that this is splitting liberals and conservatives, right? I mean, you know, I wrote about it. My gut reaction when I heard this was, no way, this can't happen. Then I found myself agreeing with Michelle Malkin. Then I start rethinking. And, of course, you know, Kevin Drum, someone I usually agree with, seems to be supporting the deal. Richard Cohen had a column in the Washington Post today, again, supporting it. You know, David Brooks supporting it. But these charges of racism and xenophobia, I think, are ill-founded now that we know today that this company practices a boycott against Israel.
Yeah.
So you've got to think, you know, who are the racists here? Who are the xenophobes here?
True.
I just have serious problems with this deal. I think this is something that all Americans can relate to.
True. And, well, then they trump out, Schwarzenegger was on, what show was he on yesterday? He was on something.
Was he on Meet the Press?
He was on Meet the Press, and he said that the Chinese, you know, managed several ports in California California, the groper in chief, but it's the same thing. You know, the Chinese, they're communist China. You know, we let them manage the ports in California. You know, why not the UAE with the company? You know, I mean, it just gets in this whole thing, and really, Hillary Clinton had it right, where she doesn't believe any foreign company should run any of the U.S. ports. Should be American companies run the U.S. ports.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said in this case for economic nationalism, that certain industries should be controlled by American interests.
Yeah.
And whether it's the British, whether it's the Danes, whether it's the Chinese, whether it's the United Arab Emirates, I mean, I just think there's something to be said. The ports in America are sort of the great gaping hole in the security network around the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Why at a time like this would you agree to this kind of deal. And let's face it, Bush is being hoisted on his own petard here. I mean, he's the one who keeps talking about the pre-11, 9/11 mindset, going after Democrats for not being tough enough. You know, I mean, you got to laugh at this.
Well, yeah, and there was that poll, there was that poll that came out that the American people apparently trust the Democrats more with national security now than Bush. So the Democrats have taken that that mantle of national security away from Bush now, because Bush has come across as this big business, careless leader now.
Yeah, and the conservatives who write at places like the Corner, the National Review's online blog.
Oh yes.
I mean, I think they're terrified by these numbers, because this is the shift, I think. Mm. You know, Democrats have always had the domestic issues like health care, like Social Security. Now, you know, if Democrats can start eating into Bush's numbers in terms of national security,
it's all over with.
There's a potential. And, you know, Marshall Whitman, who writes the Bull Moose blog, has said that 2006 is shaping up to be like 1994.
Yeah.
So potentially you're looking at a congressional revolution this year.
We can only hope. You know what I'm saying? We can only hope.
We can keep our fingers crossed. Yeah.
Absolutely. Your lips to God's ears. You know what I'm saying? I hate to invoke religion, but we need a little religion. You know what? Because, you know, as much as I'm a Democrat, the Democrat Party is so disorganized. You know what I mean? Yeah. Harry Reid's from my state, from here in Nevada. You know, but I do not like the man at all. I mean, he looks like, you know, bitter old man up there. You know, bellyaching about the Republicans. And same with Howard Dean. Howard Dean's always got that foot in the mouth disease. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and of course Hillary has her own problems.
Yeah, Hillary. I just wish they'd realize some big donors got to realize, hey, there's a problem with this party. We need to put in some new faces out there and retire these dinosaurs out there.
Well, Obama's a new face.
Obama, yeah. Who else?
There's a possibility there.
Yeah. Mark
course,
Warner.
Talk lately about Al Gore.
Do you think he's going to run in 08? I really don't think so, huh?
You know, I don't think he will, but I think he's the only credible liberal alternative to Clinton at this point. Who else is there in that party who can run from the left? I don't think it can be John Edwards. I don't think it can be Kerry.
No.
Gore has some credibility left. Mm-hmm. It's a possibility.
Well, even after he showed up on Saturday Night Live and played the Bachelor spoof?
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
With the rose.
Perfect.
What about Mark Warner, from the former governor of Virginia?
Yeah, I'm not really impressed. I don't know. I know, you know, as a red stater, he has the values credentials. He seems awfully bland to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really not sure that... I'm really not sure that he has the kind of charisma to match up against someone like McCain.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, it's something interesting. You know, I think now there was always sort of pre-9/11, there was always this understanding that, you know, the president really had to be a governor, right? That it was very difficult for sitting congressmen to run for president and win.
Mm-hmm.
There haven't been many of them. I think that might be changing now. Now that national security is actually sort of the primary issue in American life, I think that kind of congressional experience, Washington experience, is in fact necessary.
Hmm.
And I think that'll hurt someone like Warner. You know, Warner can't point to his national security credentials.
True. Well, Hillary's on the, what was she on? She's on a couple of committees that she can point to that, but...
she's on defense, I think.
Foreign relations, I believe.
But
I don't know. I mean, Wesley Clark, I mean, he hasn't held elective office, but he was, the four-star general, maybe him.
You could possibly a Clinton Clark ticket.
There you go.
Along those lines.
How about Richardson, the governor of New Mexico?
Yeah. Remember that story last year where he claimed to have been drafted by the Oakland A's and
yes.
Kansas City A's?
Yes.
And lied about his resume. I mean, that's not that that's a deal breaker, but
no.
You know. I don't know. He doesn't look presidential to me.
No. And then actually, I want to talk about the Darfur. The Darfur region. Now, the UN is kind of starting to put a more spotlight on that area.
Yeah, they are. Although, you know, and I recommend all your readers, all your listeners, check out Coalition for Darfur. It's a great blog run by a liberal from Demagogue and a conservative from Southern Appeal, and it's a sort of a bipartisan effort to raise awareness.
Hmm.
You know, I'm certainly no expert on this, but when it's interesting, we get so wrapped up in Portgate and the Cheney shooting and, you know, all these speculations about who might run. And meanwhile, the stories today that you know, you have 20,000 displaced Chadians in their own country because the conflict in Darfur is spreading across the border into Chad, much the same way that Rwanda spread across into the Congo. You have apparently 200,000 Sudanese refugees who are pouring into Chad right now. I mean, this is just a crazy situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is being done for it?
Nothing.
Right now, nothing. I mean, yeah. I mean, right now, nothing. You know, I think everyone was hoping that the African Union would be able to do something, but, you know, they don't have what it takes to go in there and establish order.
Yeah. Well, the only countries with the capability are the British and the United States to go in there, and we're tied up in Iraq.
Yeah, isn't that the problem?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm an American in spirit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're tied up in this bogged down in essentially a quagmire,
mm-hmm.
and limits our capacities to deal with Iran, with North Korea, with Darfur, with you know, the war on terror in Afghanistan. And it's just a shame because the human cost is enormous.
Yeah.
Now,
what about Iran? You want to mention that about Iran?
Well, I mean, this is yet another interesting story because it seemed as if the only viable option to dealing with Iran was to let the Russians enrich the uranium for the Iranians, which would, you know, essentially limit Iran's capabilities, weapons capabilities, and also test whether or not Iran was actually serious about only using its nuclear energy nuclear fuel for energy purposes.
Mm.
And they've rejected that.
Yeah.
And the International Atomic Energy Agency came out with a report today, which is fairly, you know, fairly bland and doesn't go after Iran nearly enough. You know, we got to start thinking, what are the options? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, we can't. Since we're all busy in Iraq, we can't. I guess we could go in there into Iran, but I mean, that's a country twice the size with three times as many people.
It is, and it's also a country with a pro-Western youth movement with a significant a significant democratic reform movement. I know you do a lot of culture on this show. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Arguably an incredible film industry over there.
Mm-hmm.
Abbas Kiarostami, maybe the greatest director of the 1990s, Iranian. What do we do? Bombing them. I mean, how would the Shia respond in Iraq if we bomb Iran?
Oh yeah, but not just them. The rest of the Arab world will go crazy if we. You know, we already got our feet all over Saudi Arabia. Now we have our feet are all over Iraq. Now we're going to go into Iran. Yeah.
Exactly. And I just whatever the answer is, we need strong leadership that operates within the reality-based community, which. And more and more, you just begin to wonder if this administration has any clue.
I think this administration is worn out. You know, I mean, they've been since 9/11, it's been one thing after another. And I said, I think Bush in the second term should have cleaned out and brought in a whole new set of people because Rumsfeld and Cheney and all them. I mean, they're just I think they're just worn out. They're beat. I mean, they can't wait to get this term over so they can get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clear that whether Cheney retires or not, we don't know. But I mean, Rumsfeld may be on the way out.
Mm.
He may try to clean house. And it's probably bad for the Republicans to have all these characters hanging around going into 2008.
Mm.
I mean, they'd probably rather have whoever their presumptive candidate is, whether it's McCain or Allen or whomever. Not having to worry about Rumsfeld opening his mouth every week. That tends to lead to problems.
Yeah, or Shooter Cheney, blowing holes in somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't want that.
No. And I also want to talk about the South Dakota, and they passed that bill. Apparently, they're going to try and outlaw pretty much abortion completely.
Yeah, this is the first big test. Whether it goes anywhere, of course, we'll have to wait and see. But I mean, this is the first big test of the more conservative court. That the right wing Supreme Court that the right wing has been basically pushing for a generation, and this will be a huge test. Stevens seems to hold the balance of power right now. It's not clear that they would go so far as to overturn Roe, which I think would be bad for Republicans anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think abortion will be resurrected as a key issue going forward. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Now, you don't think Rove will dust this off to kind of spur the conservative voters to come out like he did in the in 2004 with the gay marriage initiatives on all the ballots across the country? I think that he used that to spur all the conservatives to come out and vote.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned I think the worst thing that can happen to the Republicans is Roe is overturned.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if Roe is ever overturned, it would mobilize the other side.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think not just women across America, but I mean, you know, pro-choicers who essentially are fairly complacent, thinking that abortion will remain legal, would come out in full force.
Yeah.
Republicans do better when abortion is an issue that they can sort of toss out there to try to appease the right and to get them mobilized.
Yeah. Actually, I want to talk a little bit about the before we run out of time, about Canadian politics. I know you just elected a conservative government. What happened over there?
Ooh, yeah. well, you know, we've essentially had, with the exception of 1 year in '79 and 80. I'm trying to get my years straight here, like 85 through 91. We've essentially had liberal government straight from 1963. This is a country with a dominant liberal party that had worn out. And Canadians wanted change. They wanted a government that was more accountable. And they were willing to give the conservatives a chance. Mm. It's a minority government, though, so we're not really sure how long it will last. What is interesting is that the Prime Minister Harper is Bush-friendly.
Mm.
And that always doesn't always go over well up here.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of an interesting time up here to see whether there will be any kind of drift to the right in Canada and what that will mean for our politics.
Yeah. Now, we only got about 2 minutes left. Now, with the Olympics over, now the next Winter Olympics is going to be up there in Vancouver and British Columbia. Now, how are the Canadians gearing up for this Olympics? How are they treating it?
You know, we're really excited. I mean, our hockey team sucked, and you know, I think our national pride was shot down.
Hmm.
We placed so much emphasis on our hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
But we did really well. You know, we ended up third, one medal behind the U.S. I think there's a lot of excitement now going into 2010, even a lot of excitement for Beijing. You know, Canada, we tend to have an extremely fragile sense of self, extremely fragile identity. And so when our athletes do well, as they did in Turin, it makes us all feel good.
That's good. So, well, Michael, we'll let you go. We're at the end of our little segment here with you.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
No problem. We'll have Davey back again. Well, we'll add you to our little rotation here.
Any time. I'm happy to talk with you. I hope your listeners check out the reaction. It's always pretty diverse and find stuff they like there.
Well, very good. Michael, thank you very much for being on.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Have a good night. And that was Michael J.W. Stickings of the Reaction, the-reaction.blogspot.com. And also he's a blogger over at The Moderate Voice, which is Joe Gandelman's stellar blog. And it was good, a nice little talk about the whole mess with Bush and Iraq and Cheney and the Portgate, Darfur, you know, Iran. We pretty much hit all the hot topics. South Dakota, I couldn't believe when they passed that. That was just what is going on up there. And then with the Canadian politics electing the conservative government, so we'll see how long that lasts. Like I said, I'd like to see a Democrat get in president here in the United States and maybe keep the Congress with the Republicans, because you have that check and balance. Which I think it's the problem with Bush and Congress. There's no check and balance on our government here in United States, because it's all one party. You know, like when Clinton was in, he had a GOP Congress, and you know what? The government shut down a few times, and so did the museums. Oh well, they got the budgets, the spending shrink to the slowest pace in years under Clinton when the GOP ran the Congress. Then why can't we go back to that? You know what I mean? So we'll see what happens, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes in the second hour with Philip Wynn from BlogCritics.org, and then ending the program will be Hamilton Steel of Battlestar Argus. So we'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. This is Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com. Thank you.
guarantee that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And we are back on Subject to Discussion for the second hour. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want. Just do not call me Philip Wynn from blogcritics.org because he hasn't called in yet, so maybe he's just a couple minutes late. But and this is live on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Pacific time in Las Vegas. And thank you, everybody, for listening to the program. I like that interview we had the first hour with Michael J.W. Stickings of the reaction.blogspot.com. It's very nice. I like a different approach. I like Chip. I like Justin. But it's nice to, you know, freshen it up a little bit. And like I said, hopefully Philip Wynn will be joining us. He's one of the co-founders of blogcritics.org, so hopefully he'll be along and give us our pop culture discussion. And in the meantime, while we wait for him, I shall go through the ratings for last week, according from Nielsen. For the week of February 20th through the 26th, the top 10 shows, their networks and viewership. Of course, American Idol was number one on, from Wednesday on Fox with 31.68 million viewers. Wow, it's incredible, people watching that damn show. American Idol Tuesday. How many days is this show on? It must be on 2 days a week, obviously. American Idol Tuesday. It's got to be, if it's on twice. I'm sorry? Is that
three times?
Three times? I can't stand it the first time I watch it. I got who sits through that show three different times? I don't know. Tuesday, American Idol.
Well, the one show is the results show.
Oh, the results show. American Idol Tuesday did 30.16 million viewers. And then Dancing with the Stars Drew Lachey won that damn thing. And Stacey Keibler came in second. It was Sunday with 27.22 million. And where are the Olympics? The Olympics are down here. NBC on Thursday with 25.72 million viewers. Big disappointment for NBC. Big disappointment. You know, those Olympics did not clean up like they thought they would. Thursday, okay, there's the Olympics. Tuesday Olympics did 25.07 million viewers. Grey's Anatomy is in there with 24.76 million viewers on ABC. American Idol Thursday, there's the other one. American Idol Thursday, 23.37 million viewers. And then there's the Winter Olympics, 22.48. Dancing with the Stars again, that must be on 2 days a week now, too. And then the Winter Olympics again on 16.4 million from Saturday. Wow. So that's terrible that the Olympics could not compete against the onslaught of American Idol and Dancing with the Stars, of all things. How'd you like to be, you know, in NBC, seeing the thing they're going to clean up with the Olympics, and all of a sudden see these damn American Idol and Dancing with the Stars beat the hell out of your Olympics? All the money they spent on sending people over there with Bob Costas and whoever the hell else they had, Jim Lampley, and Julia Roberts is doing some reporting for them too. You know, I mean, they sent pretty much everybody and their brother over there to cover this, and yet the ratings didn't hold up. So they're hoping that they'd recover with the next Olympics. I know I was reading with USA Today that they gave NBC a bronze for its Olympic coverage, and they're hoping they can improve on that with the next Olympics, which will be in Beijing. And then, of course, the next Winter Olympics is going to be in Vancouver, British Columbia. So that'll be exciting. And I think that because it's more, you know, a lot of the CNN, all they gave away a lot of results, you know, and then, you know, what you need to watch it for, CNN and them gave other results away because of the time difference. So hopefully the Olympics will be airing in Vancouver will give higher ratings. And, of course, the Olympics in Beijing, it'll be during the day. The time difference is going to be a little more friendlier. So the time difference when the Olympics are on during the day in Beijing will be prime time here in the United States. So, that's going to work out, hopefully, with the ratings for NBC, because, boy, they spent millions on these games. And yet I did not see one ad for Battlestar Galactica at all during the Olympics, so especially the closing ceremonies. Where the hell are the ads? So, and then we had the Olympic, the article reflecting the coverage of the Olympics, the ratings. Olympic viewership falls 37% from 2002. NBC's primetime Olympics coverage from Turin ended up averaging 20.2 million viewers per night, a 37% decline from the Salt Lake City Games 4 years ago, with an even steeper decline among young viewers.
Yeah,
so,
but
wow.
Come on. I mean, it was here. So more people are going to watch it because it's just here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Who's going to watch this because it's in Italy? You know what I mean? I was looking for Chef Boyardee to light the torch or light the smoke, whatever the hell that thing is.
Well, and the nightly, because it was what, on ABC nightly, like 8 p.m. to probably 11?
NBC.
Or ABC, whatever?
NBC. Don't switch the network. NBC.
They're all the same.
National Broadcasting Company.
It's... Really wanted to search, you'd go online and look for the results before you watch
exactly.
it. So that's probably why a lot of people didn't watch.
Yeah, and when the CNN gave away the damn results, too. Why the hell are you watching it if CNN's going to give away the results? You know, NBC couldn't black it all out. But
now, some people that like the sport, whatever they showed that evening, will watch it. But, you know, it's a very niche.
Yeah, I got.
I even think the Summer Olympics are niche. I just don't think it appeals to everybody.
Yeah, I didn't watch very much of it. The only thing I watched was the damn curling business. Yeah, I thought it was maybe women curling their hair.
That's gonna be huge, like poker soon. Here. You're gonna be able to bet on curling.
Yeah, the curling pay per view spectacular.
Yeah. He throws the stone.
Let's get.
Look at that! That was a great curl. Look at the sweepers.
Let's get ready to curl. Yeah, Michael Buffer will be introducing the players. So, but
you hear the sweepers?
Well, that was exciting. We finally won a damn medal in that damn sport.
Imagine that.
Curling, you know. And it wasn't anybody curling their hair either. And how about, speaking of going off topic, but what the hell, what the hell's her name? That chick, that blonde?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people complaining about...
Who?
There's no blacks in the Winter Olympics.
Yeah, that's true. Wait a minute now. Didn't somebody win something?
I hear the blacks are going to start a new event. It's going to be called Jerry Curling.
Terrible.
Come on, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was, but I mean, somebody won something. Some kid, he was black. He won something in skating, I think it was. But anyway, the ratings dropped over here. 20.2 million viewers per night, 37% decline from the Salt Lake City Games 4 years ago, with an even steeper decline among young viewers. Hey, nobody's watching this because, you know, they rarely watch the American Idol and the damn Dancing with the Stars and Skating with the Stars and what's next, Cooking with the Stars, you know, Operating with the Stars. You know, how many more of these damn shows we can put up with? And the closing ceremonies on Sunday only had 14.8 million viewers and got clobbered.
Well, I'm sure they'll have a lot if there's having sex with the stars.
There you go, sex with the stars. We have Tom, what the hell's his name? Tom Cruise, and you have sex with Tom Cruise. The closing ceremony, some people in chair probably want to have sex with Katie Sackhoff, but I won't say. The closing ceremonies on Sunday had only 14.8 million viewers and was clobbered by ABC's finale of Dancing with the Stars. It was a disheartening showing for NBC, no kidding. The network had promised advertisers an average of between 12 and 14 ratings points for the games. Ooh. Where are we here? And barely made it. The average rating was 12.2. They barely made it. According to Nielsen Media Research, each ratings point represent 1.1 million households, and that's network viewers. Of course, the cable net Nielsen numbers are lower. I think it's like 1 point, cable is 800,000 homes, I believe it is now. NBC had expected ratings to go down from Salt Lake City due to the time difference and rise in patriotism following the 2001 terrorist attacks. But mainly had hoped the drop wouldn't be as steep. So the Salt Lake City Games averaged 31.9 million viewers a night, while the 1998 Nagano Games averaged 25.1 million viewers. So, but they did try and save themselves, NBC. They said, but our cable internet coverage showed growth, slightly mitigating the primetime problems. Well, the advertising is on TV, so I don't know what they're talking about. And the cable, I know NBC, MSNBC pretty much caved into the Olympics, and I know USA pretty much caved in. And they're wishing that showed. It was called Olympic Ice, or whatever the hell it was. And it was more of a biting commentary on the Olympics, and they're saying they may incorporate that more of a let Costas loose with his commentary and let Lampley loose on his commentary, kind of make more of an attitude to it, or more of a, you know, let him criticize whoever's, you know, skating or, you know, what's going on with the game. So, and among those viewers aged 18 to 49 years old, ratings for the turn games were down 45%. Advertisers are most interested in these young viewers who abandoned the Olympics in large numbers for Fox's American Idol. So, there you go, right there. And what else we had here? Also, Tuesday we had the West Wing star Stein's on for Studio 60. The West Wing star Bradley Whitford, who has reunited with the show's creator for the NBC drama pilot Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. The project was also stars Matthew Perry. Oh, nice to see he's finally found some work again. And Amanda Peet is set behind the scenes of a fictional broadcasting network's flagship late-night sketch comedy show. That sounds like Gary Shandling written all over it. And so we'll see what happens with that. I don't know. These shows, I mean, they tried that with sports. What the hell is that show? Sports Night. That didn't do too well. And then, I don't know. And they tried that with the other show, News Radio, with what's his name? It died. Phil Hartman died during it, and David Spade and some of them. So those shows, yeah. Well, I guess News Radio lasted for a few years.
Andy.
Andy Richter. Was he in it? No, you know.
No.
Andy Dick.
Yeah. Dick.
There you go. He was in that show, too. And then also we had this is from CBS Radio sues Howard Stern. This is from today. CBS Corporation's radio division sued Howard Stern on Tuesday, claiming its former star, Shock Jock, breached his contract with them when he moved to Sirius Satellite Radio Incorporated. Okay, INC. The lawsuit, which also named Sirius and Stern's agents as defendants, claims Howard Stern improperly used CBS Radio's airtime to promote his new show with Sirius, which began last month. CBS also claims that Howard Stern discussed his plans with Sirius without disclosing them to CBS as required under his contract. Uh-oh. Even before the lawsuit was filed, the New York State Supreme Court, Stern tried to upstage the action with a hastily arranged news conference in Manhattan today to strike first as former employer. Oh, man. Stern said the lawsuit was meritless and said CBS was trying to bully him. He called the lawsuit a personal vendetta against him by CBS Chief Executive Officer Leslie Moonves, whom Stern said he held a grudge against him. Yeah. Well, he did leave, and he said with Adam Carolla and whoever the hell else, Jan, Bobby, and Cindy are hosting the other shows. Stern said CBS officials knew of his plans to leave for Sirius and also condoned his references to satellite radio on the air and did nothing to stop him when he spoke about it on his show. So, I mean, they're just piling on. And, I read that this lawsuit is, what, $400 million, the lawsuit they filed against Stern. Let me see if I can find it here. But, what they expect him to do? I mean, he's going to have the new show on Sirius. He's not going to plug it on his radio show. I mean, it's ridiculous. And, it's the same thing with now that, they're beating up on Oprah today, too, or about she ran some kind of show talking about sex, and she had this woman on there. Apparently, had so many sex partners, and she was very, very graphic about the sex talk. And they're saying, well, how come the FCC is not going to go after Oprah? Because if they have a Stern, they'd be all over Stern if we're talking about this stuff on, especially Oprah's on during, basically across the country, she's on during the afternoon, but there's kids, watching. Well, they're saying that she'll get away with it because it's Oprah is doing it as a self-help type of thing and not a ploy for ratings. So I don't know about that. I think it's BS, but, what the hell they expect? But Stern, oh no, we'll find him to death, and then have CBS sue him over that BS. I mean, it's ridiculous. And also, I have this as breaking news: that's Courtney Cox returns to TV in Dirt. When Friends left television, so did Courtney Cox, who played Monica Geller in a long-running series. But the actress is coming back in Dirt, a drama pilot for the FX network, in which she'll play tabloid editor Lucy Spiller. So it's nice to see they're all finding work now. Matthew Perry is finding work, and now she's finding work. They're suffering. Where's the other one? She'll be doing series again because her movie's all bomb. Jennifer Aniston. Where are we at here? Production of the pilot is scheduled to begin in March. We are absolutely thrilled that Courtney has chosen Dirt for her. Is she married to somebody with the name Dirt? No, that's what the hell is his name? Arquette. What's his name? David Arquette. There you go. We are absolutely thrilled that Courtney has chosen Dirt for her return to series television, said Nick Grad, the network's vice president of original programming, said in a statement on Tuesday. Along with the show's creator Matthew Carnahan, Cox and her husband David Arquette are credited as executive producers. Wow. So, they say they never do strike gold with these shows. Joey, I think, I don't know if they canceled Joey yet, but, I mean, that show has been treading water since it started, and, they brought back, relaunched, and all this stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous. And then they had this story about the Da Vinci Code. Apparently, they're having a battle over that book, and then they may end up halting the release of that movie. Apparently, the Da Vinci Code, the publishers are getting sued by another book, another book that they published. So they got an author suing, saying that the Da Vinci Code is a ripoff from his book. And where was that here? Will moviegoers have to wait to crack the Da Vinci Code? The answer might hinge on a high-stakes legal battle playing out in the UK, which threatens the future of the mega-popular novel and its cinematic offshoot. The trial began on Monday in London, pitting two British authors against publisher Random House and accusing Da Vinci Code mastermind Dan Brown of lifting the central theme for his 2003, 4, and 5 bestseller from the 1982 nonfiction tome, The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail. So, and also, when, you know, I said Random House also published that book as well. So, they're, you know, fighting like cats and dogs. They say that they could slap an injunction to hold this movie from being released with Tom Hanks. So, of course, we'd hate to see that. Tom Hanks needs to make a few million every year. You know what I'm saying? He's got to, you know, keep his lifestyle going. And then Oscar counts ready as the ballot deadline arrives. They said the Oscars are going to be, was it this Sunday, I believe they're going to be. And it says here, this is from Los Angeles, voting in this year's Academy Awards race drew to an official close on Tuesday as a last wave of Oscar ballots poured in and two accountants prepared to tabulate the results under tight security. The final tally for the film industry's highest honors is one of the most closely guarded secrets in Hollywood, with ballots locked in Funko Wagnall's porch in the pickle jar. No, ballots locked in a safe and counted behind closed doors of a nondescript conference room at an undisclosed location. So I wonder if Cheney's over there in the undisclosed location counting that. So, and they're getting ready for that. And then just the Oscars. We're going to be hit over to have the Oscars. I was watching the preview on Entertainment Tonight. And, Jesus, they make it look like it's, what is that? That soap opera has that big entrance, The Young and the Restless. They Mary Hart running around in a red dress and, you know, making it look like it's, you know, breaking news. You know, I mean it's important, but it's not going to put the tilt the world on its axis with the damned Academy Awards. And then we had the story about what's his name from Patrick Dempsey from Grey's Anatomy. Patrick Dempsey says his childhood wasn't so McDreamy. He wasn't diagnosed as being dyslexic until he was 12 years old. He said, I think it's made me who I am today, says Dempsey, who plays neurosurgeon Derek Shepherd on the ABC hit Grey's Anatomy. He's going to be on Barbara Walters' Oscar special. Ugh. And so he had dyslexia. So, and what else? Tyra Banks does more than talk on a TV show. So Tyra Banks, of course, you know, she does the Next American Idol, but model or hell it is, and she has her own talk show. And Tyra Banks really throws herself into her job as a talk show host, often in ways only a recent retired supermodel can. It says here on Wednesday shows, for example, Banks will be shown going undercover as a stripper at a topless bar, although the former Victoria's Secret model stops short of a complete disclosure. In the past, she's posed as a Las Vegas showgirl, wow, and used her face as canvas for makeup lessons. What the hell? I wonder where the hell she work at in Las Vegas, I wonder. Let's see here. So we're still hopefully waiting for Philip Wynn to call in, but if anybody wants to talk about Battlestar Galactica, we'll dive into that. And because they had the last episode, of course, was downloaded, which I thought was pretty damn good. I'm going to dive into Galactica just yet here. I'm going to talk about The Apprentice, because The Apprentice is coming back. Is it tonight? I believe it is, because they had the deal or no deal, and then follow that's going to be the new Apprentice with Donald Trump. And him and Martha have been going back and forth like cats and dogs over this, excuse me, and apparently he was, she was saying that she only agreed to do her apprentice because Trump wasn't going to come back, and the plan was she was going to walk in and fire Trump and take over the franchise. And she goes, why would she agree to do her apprentice when there's going to be, you know, why would she do, you know, one if there's going to be two apprentices on the air? She didn't make any sense. And Trump fired back a letter saying, you know, as soon as he saw the show, he knew her show was doomed because of a bomb. And the first sign that they knew that her show was in trouble when they had a joint casting call for the two apprentice shows. Apparently his line was four times as long for people trying out for his show than it was for Martha Stewart's Apprentice. So that set the tables for that. And then we had Anna Nicole Smith appearing at the adult porn movie called Mrs. Smith Goes to the Supreme Court. Now, she was there. She's fighting over her will. And she looks pretty good now. I mean, she's lost all that weight. She looks pretty good. Anna Nicole Smith is making friends in high places. The Trim Spa spokesmodel and former playmate appeared before the Supreme Court Tuesday. Can you imagine that? For yet another round, an ongoing battle over her late husband's estate. Here's the one. She married that guy who was, what, 89 years old. and she was 26 years old and a topless dancer, and she married this guy in 1994, and he was a billionaire. His estate when he died was worth $1.6 billion. Ever since the guy died, the following year prompted a fierce battle between Smith and Marshall's son, Pierce, who has argued that his father's various wills and trusts make him the sole heir of a fortune estimated to be at $1.6 billion. Well, why can't he just, you know, here it is here. I don't understand how they keep going back to this, because while Pierce Marshall triumphed in Texas probate court, Smith came out on top in a federal court in California, where she was awarded $474 million. Now she's being greedy. Now she come back. She wants more of this money. The amount was later reduced by a federal district judge and then tossed out altogether by a federal appeals court, which ruled the court in Texas where the Marshalls live trumped any other jurisdictions. Now they got the courts battling over this money. It's a quite a story, said Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer said on Tuesday. Breyer said that there was evidence that Pierce Marshall hired detectives to keep Smith from her husband's bedside, and that J. Howard Marshall's will was forged. So this sounds like an episode of Dallas we're working on here. You know what I'm saying? Why don't they just sell this, give her, you know, half of the money, give her $600-800 million, whatever the hell it is, and go away? Because it's still the only thing that's making any money out of this are the damn lawyers. You know, I mean. Yeah, I'd like to have some of that money. That'd be kind of cool. But, it's, you know, it's one thing after another. I mean, you know, it we have to just settle with the damn estate and give them the money. And where else are we also here? Oh, this is also from E! Online. They have the Winter Olympics where a Bodie Miller disaster. Here's this guy who's saying he's, you know, he's going to come out of there with all these gold medals. He winds up with zero. The lowest household primetime ratings on record. We went through that down 37% from 2002. But, you know, and then they had that girl, she was hot-dogging it with the snowboard, ended up wiping out, and you know, all this. And they had that kid, who kind of looks like Carrot Top, he won in the medal, and he came back, and apparently he was after Kara Phillips on CNN, and then they showed up in the studio and did all this hogging. Now, how come he didn't go back for the closing ceremonies? I think part of the rules is for these Olympics, you win a damn medal, you better come back for the closing ceremonies, you know what I mean? And actually, I kind of like it that we didn't dominate the Olympics this time around, because you know what? We got a bad enough PR in this country. We don't need the damn, you know, winning all the medals in the Olympics either. I mean, let us drop back to second or third for this, you know, sake of world peace, for crying out loud, for a few minutes. You know, because, you know, let the Canadians win the medals, with Germany, whoever the hell has won all the medals. You know, I just think that we should have, you know, I'm glad we didn't, you know, hot dog all the Olympics. I mean, that's what I think, but, again, we're just hoping Philip Wynn might have met with disaster, so he hasn't appeared on the program. But go through some other news here. We have, for our next guest comes online, which is Hamilton Steele from Battlestar Argus. I'm going to talk about Downloaded while we're at it, so we're getting ready. Actually, we have the ratings in for Sacrifice, which is episode 216, the much missing ratings. The ratings did a 1.8 rating. So that's a little dip, and they're hoping that the ratings were Downloaded would rebound. So I'm not too sure about that one. I mean, I don't know if that the Downloaded will rebound, because that really didn't show too much. It showed the Cylons and everything, but the a lot of people show up for the space fights and all that. What did you think of Downloaded? Did you like it?
I thought it was probably the best episode of the season.
Really? So you think the ratings are going to jump up with this?
I don't know. I thought it was a great episode.
How about the
just for the fact that you got the other perception.
Yeah, and all those. I thought it was cool how they, you know, this show doesn't have that much of a budget, but walking by, you see all the other sixes and boomers turn around. That was pretty cool. You know, but the,
would say it should bounce back, because it's probably the best episode this year, besides maybe like the first episode. But.
Really? Because you want the next two or the season finale? Part one is Friday, and then part two. And then, you know what? I didn't like the way they hurry up and have that baby, give them, you know, have birth to that baby. All of a sudden, she had the baby.
Yeah.
I thought they're making it to some
Has
huge...
it been 9 months?
No.
Well, she's a Cylon. Maybe she gets pregnant.
No. I think they said, didn't they say it's like a month, and the thing, they say a month later or something like that, or something that they sped it up where.
the cool thing is they kind of had a timeline there at the beginning of this episode where they kind of went back and they went, which is kind of cool because you kind of get lost after so many episodes because it's kind of. Yeah, I don't want to say it's dragging, but it is kind of going slow because.
It's only been 6 months since the attack on the fleet and everything. But, I mean, I thought it was interesting how with this six that went back to Caprica, that Baltar was actually, you know, stalking her the way, you know, they turned it, reversed the roles like it is on the series. You know?
Well, I'm wondering if the, what's-her-face on Caprica.
Deanna Beers. I mean, Zena?
No, not
Oh, Boomer? Zena. Boomer?
No, not Boomer.
Oh, which one now? Boomer 6?
The blonde here.
6.
6.
There we go.
If she's, if her and Boomer are going to be like, well, especially 6, if she wants to try to get to the Galactica to try to, since she's in love with.
With Baltar.
No, it's Baltar, but is Baltar a Cylon? Because she's seeing him in his head.
I don't know. He might be. He might be. I don't know. I don't know. That's, I liked it. And then, you know, a lot of people say, oh, what his name was on? Xander, or what his name was, Anders. He was on, and it's how they played him into the show. I mean, yeah, well, you know, a lot of people don't like Anders. They call him Blanders and all this stuff. But it's, you know, it's fine. You know, they worked in the Caprica angle into the show again, and they, you know, I liked it. I liked this episode. I just don't think the ratings are going to be higher than they were before. You know, a lot of people tune in for the action. And I like the way they cheapened the pregnancy, though, because, you know, they played it up in those ads like it's going to be some, I expect it to be some monumental event that the, you know, Galactica is going to be under attack somewhere, and then off on some ship in the fleet, Adama's going to be there delivering the baby. I mean, that's how I would have done, all hell breaking loose on the cliffhanger, and at the end have him holding the baby or something. I don't know. You know, now they, you know, they, and then they had this adoption of the baby, and now the baby's off into the fleet, and this
which,
and this.
Which gives it a whole new direction, because you don't know who's got the baby.
Yeah, some pretty hot chick has got the baby, though. Yeah,
and I have a feeling the way it's like, the episodes are slow, but they jump so far ahead of, you know, it's like you show episode here, then it's like 3 months later. So I'm guessing by the beginning of next season, that kid could be like 10 years old.
Yeah, but
the way they jump around,
like they did in V, the kid in V grew up in 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then they, well, and you know what? Most of the cast wasn't even in this episode. And there's no Starbuck, was there?
No,
there's no Apollo.
Nope.
We didn't see.
They didn't have to pay him.
Didn't pay Colonel Ty. Didn't pay.
Didn't have to pay anyone for this episode. Except
Aaron
for
Douglas.
Aaron
Douglas was in one scene.
Okay. So I had to pay him a couple hundred bucks there.
Adama and the Doctor, Boomer and Hilo really was in the damn episode. And Baltar.
And the baby.
And the baby. And the rest of them are off this week. Rosalind and all that. So it was a good episode. I liked it because, you know, we were led to believe that they're going to cut this episode. But since they did the two-parter with Pegasus, they dropped something else, and they wound this episode in there as a, you know, reflection of from the Cylons, of the Cylons' point of view. So anyway, I think our guest is on the line. There we go. And we are joined by Hamilton Steele from Battlestar Argus. Hamilton, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. How you be doing there, bud?
Oh, fine. Very good. Good connection. Very good connection. And we want to thank you for being on the program.
Oh, not a problem. It's a pleasure to be on it. And I apologize if my accent's showing through a little bit.
That's no problem.
I'll try to clean it up as I go along. I don't get to speak a lot of English these days.
Oh, so. That's no problem. But, yes, again, man, Hamilton Steele is the creative genius behind Battlestar Argus, which is over on the Yahoo groups. You have to get your own website for this. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I'm working on it. I tend to be a bit of a busy man, so I get caught up with a lot of different things. So.
Yeah. Now, give the listeners out there a little background on yourself. I mean, in addition to creating the Argus, so what's your background?
Well, I'm an independent filmmaker. So I haven't really, can't say that I've done anything award-winning or stupefying or anything to that effect. I make a lot of little different stuff, little film festivals, so forth. I'm also a writer.
Wow.
But this is really my first time writing anything for the sci-fi genre.
Oh, hold on, Hamilton. The Galactica's coming by. There you go. The bad muffler is horrible on that ship. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
The old ship sounds like the Argus going by, doesn't it?
Well, the Argus is an old ship, so.
Yeah, anyway, so you're an independent filmmaker. Now, are you working on a project right now?
Well, I was. Hopefully I was going to work on a project right now. I'm actually right at this moment, I'm in Madrid. And, I was meeting with a few people, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So that's par for the course.
Really? And then give a nutshell what the Argus is all about.
Well, the Argus, really, you know, I was taking a look at all these different things, and the Argus happened by accident. I was on a couple of the forums, and there were some people that were doing a collaborative fan fiction. Mm-hmm. And I wrote up a little character because I love to write. I absolutely adore writing, and I had a little bit of free time. And I thought, well, you know what? I used to be an old gamer from years ago, and this kind of looked like fun. But the person chewed me out, said after I submitted a character profile, I didn't get it, that I was a lousy author, and to get the hell out of here.
Hmm.
So I thought, well, you know, fork you, I could do this too.
Yeah.
And I sat down and I started to write the concept, and as I'm prone to do, one thought led to the next, and next thing I know, the Argus was born.
Mm.
And the Argus was kind of like I looked at it and I thought, well, the Galactica was an old ship that survived the attack because it was old.
Mm-hmm.
The Pegasus survived because it jumped.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, you know, if I had another ship that somehow pulled off a miracle, that'd be kind of campy.
Yeah.
And I just looked at that. Yeah, but you know what? There's a lot of stuff floating around in junkyards. Why not something out of a junkyard? So.
Huh. Yeah, it's a fascinating story because I've been on the boards talking about it. I mean, it's very because like you say, you open it with, well, I want to get into it so far. But how do you question from the chair room? How do you strive to make your work appeal to both the old show and the new show?
Well, my concept, I'm a fan of both shows, but mm-hmm. for completely different reasons. You know, the old show was genius for its time. Sure, it's campy by today's standards, but, you know, you had the sci-fi, you had the tech. It was representative of the culture of the late 70s and the early 80s that, you know, boldly go where no man has gone before, Star Trek-ish sort
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of looked at it and thought, you know, the Argus could kind of bridge the gap because it's definitely old technology. It was, you know, the history line of the Argus is it was something that was around before the First War. It was in the First War. And here it's come back, you know, from having been decommissioned. It was waiting to be dismantled and, you know, a crew of wreckers,
mm-hmm.
you know, dusted this thing off, you know, to attempt some sort of rescue mission, and lo and behold, they succeeded.
Mm.
And so far in the storyline, they've, I don't know if maybe I'm giving a spoiler to some people who haven't read it or not, they've discovered an old, they're currently lost in space, and they've discovered an old Cylon derelict raider sitting there, and that's led them to an old base star. And so there's a little bit of the old show in it, and
that's very
good.
You
have to pay homage to one in order to keep going forward with the other.
Absolutely. It's like on this Galactica series, that every once in a while they do a little nod towards the old show. You know, of course, you know, Richard Hatch is on, but they're, you know, they had that one episode where one guy was with, you know, they're playing the theme from the old series. You know, it's kind of like their national anthem. So every once in a while they do a little nod towards the old show. You know, they had the toaster and the miniseries, and, you know, everybody, oh, that's a little nod towards the old show as well. So it's nice, you know.
It's nice to see it.
Yeah.
You have to kind of respect the roots.
Absolutely. I mean, if it wasn't for that series, this series wouldn't be on the air, and you wouldn't be writing
exactly.
your project if it wasn't for the original Galactica.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you have to look at everything. You know, I actually got kicked off of one forum because I was trying to get a few people interested in the story, and they called me something a Geno, and I'm really not too sure what that is.
That's Galactica in name only.
Ah.
Yes, that's the original series fans are very visceral in their hatred of anything to do with the new series. Yes, they refer to the new series as Galactica name only.
Oh, that's a stupid fight.
Yes, that's what I said. I mean, it's ridiculous. Now, do you watch the new series, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, what do you think of it?
I like it.
Yeah.
I really and truly like it. It's very topical for the time.
Oh yes. Now, do you take inspiration from you know, an episode of this Galactica for your project?
Well, I'll be honest. I don't think I could ever. I'm writing in the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of commonality. The history line's the same. The universe is the same. But the characters are completely different. I think about the only real inspiration was the connection to Admiral Kane.
Mm. Yes, you have her sister.
Yes, her sister,
yes.
Who I unfortunately got rid of.
Oh, you killed her off? I must have missed that. You killed her off?
Yes, I did.
Oh, no. When was this?
Well, just read back a little bit. This was about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I have to catch up then. Yeah, because you had her on, and the now according to everybody saying with this season on Galactica, the cliffhanger this season is supposed to somehow, some way reset the clock on the series. So I don't know, will that affect what you do if somehow they do? I don't know if they're going to do it, some kind of time travel or somehow, some way they're going to reset the clock in the series. Will that affect what you're doing?
Well, I don't know. That's actually been a bit of a pain in the neck, actually. As a writer, I like to write my own universe.
Mm-hmm.
And since this is not my universe, I've got to be very careful of what I do. And I tend to try to steer away from anything that the Galactica does. Like, I mean, the Argus will not be visiting Caprica because it's such a big central theme. And, you know, the Argus isn't going to meet up with the Galactica or anything to that effect. And it's a different concept I'm going with. You know, Galactica's leading this ragtag fugitive fleet on a quest for Earth. The Argus isn't.
Mm.
She's going to stick around. She's going to stay in the colonies, and she's going to continue the war.
Mm. Yeah,
and it's inspired in some sense by the fact that, you know, I get a lot of inspiration, and I don't think I could write a story for the old show because the type of writer I am, I can be very touchy, feely, and so forth, and I like to explore the human psyche. And, you know, writing sci-fi has been a real challenge because sci-fi fans are very demanding. You know, I can only do so much drama, and then they say, hey, where's the tech?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Lord help me if I make a mistake on the tech by, like, I mean, holy cow.
I know. Yeah, they go crazy, especially with my program here. I mean, they go crazy, make one little step out of line, they go after you. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, completely. You know, when I first wrote the whole kind of idea behind the Argus, I had email come to me from one person in particular. He had to tell me that the minimum turnaround time for any Battlestar would be 3 days. It would take you 3 days to get underway.
And really?
I was sitting there, and I'm going, where did you find this information?
Yeah.
You know? So I did everything to research. I even started looking into battleships and whatnot, and I sent emails to NASA, and I actually got a response back. Minimum shuttle turnaround time is like 2 months. You know?
Really?
So I thought, well, you know, you're just going to have to deal with it. These guys were mechanics. They somehow made the ship go in 30 minutes, okay?
Yeah. I mean, you know, even in this series, some things you have to suspend disbelief on some things. You know, like that episode with the projection room and, you know, how they get, you know, from that room to Earth, you know all that. He's like, huh? How they get out of that room? You know what I'm saying?
Well, this is just it. You know, it's a fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, and the idea is that you're supposed to be able to do something that nobody else does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and then now a question for chat room. Any mistakes with the characters that you regret now in your project?
Any mistakes? I would have to say killing off Kane.
Really?
Yeah. I really grew attached to the character.
Hmm.
And mainly because Kane's sort of... Kane is my wife. When I wrote the character, I didn't intend it to be like that, but as more as the personality developed, it became more evident that I was writing about my wife.
Really?
Yeah, and when it came time to finish the character off, it was kind of hard on me.
Really? Well, then, did you plan that before?
Yes, I did.
Admiral Kane died. So now the Kane family's pretty much is dead and gone for now because
completely deceased.
And then what else? In any the story, I like how you said. Well, actually, another question, French Chef. Do you plan on a cliffhanger at any time soon?
Constantly.
Really? So you're gonna have are you gonna take a
look? My cliffhangers sometimes though aren't planned because this is more for me at this point in time, something that I'm enjoying, and it's not like a source of income for me. So the cliffhanger occurs pretty much when I'm gearing up to do a production or I'm going into a project. And I try to crank out an episode a week.
Really? Yeah, I noticed that. You do a heck of a job on that. I like the story just keeps unfolding.
I want to see where it ends too.
Yeah. So you, do you have any kind of like a? I want to give anything away, but do you have like a general like a Bible or an outline where we want the story to go, or is you just going as you go?
I generally do have an outline, an idea of where I'm going for it. I know where point B is. I'm just not too sure sometimes how I'm going to get from A to B.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, have you heard any feedback from like Ron Moore or anybody like that from about what you're doing? Or
not really.
No.
Not at this point in time.
Huh.
But who knows?
Yeah. You
know, I might one day find myself in Vancouver, so we'll see.
Well, you said your idea. Now, if you know, Ron Moore could maybe take this and create like a spinoff, but technically it wouldn't be a spinoff, like Star Trek with Deep Space Nine, that they kind of linked it with the original, with the Next Generation, over this whole thing with Locutus and all that with Sisko's wife and all that. They kind of did, they linked it like that, but it's not an official link, but there's some kind of connection to the original, to the Next Generation. So Moore can do that with the Argus.
I think that'd be great.
Link it with, either with the Kane characters or somehow link it.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
The ship has got an enormous amount of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're looking at something of that age, a decommissioned ship and so forth, it's been around. It's got a lot of history, and I've had a lot of email from people who want to know more about the history of the ship.
Hmm.
So. Eventually, what I'm going to do is, after I get through what I call the first part of this whole story here, I'm going to go back and I'm going to write the script and a bit of a screenplay for it. It'll unfold more of the history of the ship, who the admiral was, Admiral Isaac Jacob, and so forth.
So, it would be ideal. Is that what you plan to hopefully turn this into either a movie or something?
I have no idea, to tell you the truth. There has been some conversation. I've gotten a lot of my colleagues that I work with interested on that.
Hmm.
Up until recently, I was living and working in France.
Wow.
So it was very, very difficult for me to get the French interested in putting together a clip or something. And sometimes sci-fi is kind of difficult to portray to the French culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not a slam on the French. I'm half French Canadian, so okay,
Well, I wonder, if you can do that. Well, because really, because of the Battlestar name, that's Galactica. That's Universal Studios property. But I wonder if you can use Battlestar Argus without worrying about lawyers and stuff, huh?
Well, I hope not. I hope I don't get into any trouble with all of that.
Well, no, I'm saying if you do a movie, you may have to get the get the
approval. Well, I would go. I'm part of the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not big Hollywood or anything to that effect, I have lived in Los Angeles and so forth. And you're in Las Vegas right now. I love the city.
Really? Yes.
I absolutely adore Sin City. I could just die and go to heaven there.
Really? Well, if you come by, you'll have to come by over here, and we'll take you to the Olympic Garden Adult Cabaret for some beautiful women, huh?
Oh, I've been there many times.
Really?
It's a great place. Hello?
So that's a good advertisement for the OG from help their business.
It's
a little PR.
An absolutely wonderful place.
Yeah.
And, so who knows? But I would go through the proper channels if I was going to do something like that.
Yeah. And actually, another question. What can the readers look forward to in the coming weeks of the Argus story?
Oh, should I give away a spoiler or
not? There you go. Why not?
Okay. Well, at the current stage of the story, they are aboard a classic base star.
Mm.
And you can look forward to them capturing the base star.
Really?
Because, as you know, the Argus is, it has nothing. It was something that nobody expected to happen.
Yeah, it's a bucket of bolts, basically, right?
It's a bucket of bolts.
Yes.
And, you're going to find out a little bit Captain Reeves' reasons for doing this, why he decided to go with this whole thing. And, I'll give away this part about it here. Captain Reeves was sitting there listening to the war on his squawk box with all of his men in the scrapyard.
Mm-hmm.
And the Argus was there because, it was decommissioned, it was sent to be dismantled, but the Argus had a problem. The hull was extra thick, and they'd been requesting for years better equipment and whatnot to cut it, and military's out of sight, out of mind, and anybody who's ever spent any time in the armed forces will tell you that happens quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it just sat there and was never dismantled or anything. And he looked at the faces of his men and the women, and they were crying and they were upset. The war, everybody's getting their butts kicked. And his simple thought was, if you make men work, they will always have hope. They can't just sit here and cry. So he went there, and lo and behold, they got this thing started. And it jumped. and of course, when they got into the rescue, they jumped again. They got lost in space. They have no clue, and of course, they were low on fuel. As you were following the story, mm-hmm. they've got no ammo per se to hang into any kind of fight. And between the captured old Raider and the old Base Star, they're going to rearm and refuel, and they're going to move on to their next objectives. And that is probably where I'm going to end my homage to the old story. It's going to move directly more into new Raiders, new plot line. You're going to meet Cylon 6, and you're going to meet some colonial spies.
Really?
Yes, because part of the concept I have is, well, if the Cylons were infiltrating the humans, maybe there was an organization somewhere high up in the food chain that was infiltrating the Cylons.
Ah, yeah, it's kind of like the CIA here in the United States. Yes, yes.
Yes, you've got it.
Yes,
you've got
that's
it.
So, that's.
There's a very interesting character, and I'm just introducing him now, and he looks like Leoben.
Oh, really?
Except he's completely human.
Oh.
It was all plastic surgery, and he, there was, in the beginning of the parts of the Arcus story, the Admiral was asking, Colonel Bridgeford, saying, what's this with this civilian that you were sent to protect? They brought a whole regiment of Marines to protect one person. And Bridgeford just said, need to know basis, and they decided I didn't need to know. Well, he's, the colony's equivalent of a Cylon infiltrator. He was sent to infiltrate them.
Interesting. And, of course, you have the quote about from Captain Reeves saying, a miracle's going to happen, but sometimes you have to push the issue. Yeah, there you go. I like that. That's a nice quote for the series.
That's what he does. Yeah. He pushes the issue.
Yeah, because the story begins, I don't want to give too much away, but it's like the Poseidon was closest to the colonial scrapyard. Now, the Argus actually jumped, and they wound up over the Poseidon, right?
Yep.
Or near it, right?
Near it.
Yeah, and they all came aboard the Argus, and then with the Admiral.
Well, the Poseidon got its ass kicked.
By the Cylons, but during the attack.
Actually, the Poseidon was originally named Prometheus.
Oh.
But then the TV show suddenly dusted off a ship called Prometheus. So I had to go back and change everything.
Really? It's got to be, because you don't know what they're doing on this series. You don't know what they're going to come up with that might affect what you're doing. That's got to be.
This is absolutely true.
Yeah. That's got to be interesting. And then Admiral Hallis ended up taking command of the Argus. And then actually you have a character on there. I was reading it. It says I'm sorry. I'm reading my notes. I went to the alchemist, and he says, come in, a dramatic voice, and he's a man wearing a lab coat of his own creation, which hung open, revealing a silver G-string.
Yes.
So that was... and then...
The alchemist is... A typical New York flamer.
There you go. And then, because we don't see this on this series, not yet anyway.
Drug dealer,
yeah, because he says, noting it was warm in the room, Ford was surprised when the private walked over, threw his arm around him, and kissed his cheek. What can I do for a soldier boy? So apparently the alchemist would only give the drugs, right, for, some kind of favor, right, a kiss.
Well, right. Actually, it was food, but he got the kiss, too. So.
Yeah, yeah. So, but because that could play into something else happening later on in the series. You could work.
Oh, it will.
You could work in, whatever, at the whole, either use, the drugs or whatever it is, older the soldiers, for sex. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there will be things that will be happening. I am going to attack the drug theme.
There you go. Yeah, so, I mean... Again, you're playing into, like they do in this series, kind of real-life events that, if you're that hooked on drugs, you'll pretty much do anything to get these drugs,
The drug addiction is very close to me. I tend to try to write stuff any chance I can about that.
Mm-hmm.
I come from Newfoundland, Canada, and there is a huge drug problem right now amongst the youth out there, and I've seen a lot of friends destroyed and families destroyed by it, so... I tend to attack that issue any chance that I can.
Yeah, so I mean, and then, so you can see how this can progress into more of a desperation for these drugs and how the alchemists can use this as a, leverage over these soldiers for whatever they want, sex or whatever,
That's right.
So it does make sense because you hear these stories here. I hear a lot of stories here in Vegas where these drug dealers, they get these women are married and seemingly happy lives with the husbands and children, and yet they end up having sex with these drug dealers because they don't have enough cash and end up having sex because it's the only way they can get money or get the drugs.
Right.
Yeah, and also I like this where he had the a secret relationship, which kind of plays on the Tyrol boomer deal, but a little differently, because Chief Forrester was fooling. Him and Kane were actually married. Alana Kane were actually married, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and then they end up, I guess the but it was only known between those two that they were married at the time of the story, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and so but I like the whole story. I mean, I got to commend you. I mean, at first I read it, I'm like, wow, what's this? Because everybody's trying something, fan fiction, but this is, it is, but it isn't. You know what I'm saying? It's more of a ongoing, story. Because the way you set it, it's like a scenes of the series.
That's right.
So I thought that's, it's just incredible. I mean, just your creativity is just amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, looking ahead, now, how long do you think you want to keep doing this story?
I don't know, to be honest.
Really?
I wish I could give you definite timelines and stuff to that effect, but I really can't. Mm. The truth of the matter is, I'm really enjoying the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was always an old fan of both of the old show, and when the new show came back out, it was a bit of a surprise for me to see a female Starbuck.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I was concerned, it didn't matter. It was still Battlestar Galactica, and it was a great show. And Argus, to me, is just an extension of that. And, even way up, 25 years later, before the show came back, I still had my little fantasies of where I'd fall asleep at night and I was inside a Viper cockpit. I never really got over my youth. So I think Argus is just a bit of an extension of that, So I'll probably write it for quite some time.
Well, that's good. Well, yeah, everybody, because, a lot of people, the series, the original series ended, still with millions and millions of viewers, but with no, it kind of left a void in everybody's lives because,
they didn't wrap it up.
They didn't wrap it up, and plus there was, an emotional attachment to the series, based on, the characters, there's something for everybody to get. The old viewers can watch Lauren Green. You have, the girls who liked Dirk Benedict or Richard Hatch, and you got the kids for Boxy, and you got everybody wants to see the cute little Muffet, bark and roll around.
Yeah,
and then you got the hot girls. You had the Cassiopeia and Athena, and then Jane Seymour was on there. And everybody has, plus it was right at the heart of, at the heat of the big Star Wars phenomenon, and everybody just glommed on to Galactica.
But Galactica was different. Galactica mm-hmm. has almost a religious element to mm-hmm. it. It's almost like mm-hmm. Moses crossing the desert with the Israelites.
That's true. Well, the original series. Now, this series is gone back to the religious, but not as, diving in as the original series did. Not yet, anyway. But, so far they've the religion is a part of this series, but not as heavy as the original show. Because we don't have Dr. Ibley or Count Ibley making stuff float in the air yet.
This is just it.
Yeah.
And actually, if you'll notice with the Argus, I've done something different. I've started to attack the religious, but from an atheist point of view.
Ah, yes.
Captain Reeves is, the adopted child of clergy,
mm-hmm.
but he himself is an atheist. He has issues with religion.
Hmm.
And it's really difficult because there's such a cry aboard the ship for some sort of chaplain, and they've put him in the place because he knows the rituals, he knows the words and all that, but he's not too impressed.
So that'd be interesting to see how that plays out. And even on the original, and this series now, they can go into that as well, because, Rosalind is the anointed one, supposedly, which I think it's a misnomer. I think Starbuck's going to end up being the true prophet of the gods, because she's always pulls out these figurines every once in a while. So I think she's the real, prophet.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, so.
I was really upset, though, when they didn't kill Rosalind off.
That it was a little hokey how they saved her life with the.
It was very campy. I will say that much. Dr. Baltar running through just in the nick of time to save the Cylon baby, was just.
Mm-hmm. It was a little. Same thing with this birth of this baby. The way they've been running these ads, I expect to be some monumental event. I thought it was going to happen during the cliffhanger that all hell's going to be breaking loose with the Cylons, and here's Adama over here on some freighter helping Boomer give birth to the Cylon baby. I thought that's how I would end. It ended up with a cliffhanger. What's Adama going to do with this baby? Is he going to kill it or what? Have it end with him holding the child? What's he going to do? Kill it?
You just have to hold on. RGM's done a really good job so far, and see
excellent.
Where it goes.
Yeah, it's an excellent series. Just, you know, so many different ways. You know, everybody's got, oh, they should have done this, should have done that. But it tells you everybody's into the show because, you know, they see what how it ended, but everybody's got their own ideas. Oh, they should have done this, should have done that. Well, you're not creating the series. It's not up to you. It's up to Ronald Moore.
Well, this is just it. And, you know, sometimes, too, people have to understand that, you know, a lot of things factor into how you're going to make a show end.
Mm-hmm.
And the characters that are going to be on it, like, I mean, there's contracts, there's money, there's a whole slew of different things, and, you know, you just got to do the best with what you have.
Yeah. Well, there's somebody's saying it, supposedly, I think we talked about it last week or week before, that somebody from the main cast isn't going to be long for this world into the third season, so whoever in the main cast it is won't be long for this world. So we don't know who that's going to be, you know.
Well.
Won't be Rosalind, I don't know. We